integrating ourselves, using our own mental staircase. My young son was screaming for 45 minutes and I didn't know how to comfort him. I finally screamed back, "Sometimes I hate you." My son was 2 and scratched his baby brother's face so hard that he left marks. I spanked his bottom like 5 hard swats. Then I left the room, walked down the hall, turned back around, and spanked him probably 5 more swats again. I screamed at him so loud I terrified him. After I had told my daughter to watch out for her little brother running in front of the swing, she almost swung right into him. I was so mad that even in front of other people at the park, I said to her, "What's wrong with you? Are you stupid?" These are some pretty awful parenting experiences, aren't they? They represent our downstairs moments, the times when we're so out of control that we say or do something we'd never let anyone else say or do to our child. The confessions I've just read come from real parents whom we know personally. And although it may surprise you, each of those parents does a great job at raising their kids. But like the rest of us, they just lose it from time to time and say and do things they wish they hadn't. Could you add your own downstairs moment to the list I just read? Of course you could. You're a parent and you're human. We see it time and again when we speak to and counsel parents. In high-stress parenting situations, parents make mistakes. All of us do. But don't forget, parenting crises are openings for growth and integration. You can use the moments when you feel yourself losing control as opportunities to model self-regulation. Little eyes are watching to see how you calm yourself down. Your actions set an example of how to make a good choice in a high emotion moment when you're in danger of flipping your lid. So what do you do when you recognize that your downstairs brain has taken over and you've begun to lose your mind? First, do no harm. Close your mouth to avoid saying something you regret. Put your hands behind your back to avoid any kind of rough physical contact. When you're in a downstairs moment, protect your child at all costs. Second, remove yourself from the situation and collect yourself. There's nothing wrong with taking a breather, especially when it means protecting your child. You can tell her you need a break to calm down so she doesn't feel rejected. Then, although it might feel a bit silly at times, try out the move it or lose it technique. Do jumping jacks, try some yoga stretches, take slow, deep breaths. Do whatever it takes to regain some of the control you lost when your amygdala hijacked your upstairs brain. You'll not only move into a more integrated state yourself, but also model for your kids some quick self-regulation tricks they can use. Finally, repair. Quickly. Reconnect with your child as soon as you are calm and feeling more in control of yourself. Then, deal with whatever emotional and relational harm has been done. This may involve your expressing forgiveness, but it may also require that you apologize and accept responsibility for your own actions. This step needs to occur as quickly as possible. The sooner you repair the connection between yourself and your child, the sooner you can both regain your emotional balance and get back to enjoying your relationship together.
Chapter 4. Kill the Butterflies. Integrating memory for growth and healing. There's no way I'm taking swimming lessons this summer. My 7-year-old made this firm proclamation when he found out we had signed him up for lessons at our local high school pool. Sitting at the dinner table, he glared at us, setting his jaw and narrowing his eyes. I looked to my husband, Scott, who shrugged as if to say, "Okay, I'll go first." "I don't get it. You love swimming." "Exactly, Dad. That's the point." He even sounded sarcastic. I already know how to swim. Scott nodded. We know you do. The lessons are to help you get better. I added, plus Henry's doing it. You'll be hanging out with him every day next week. He shook his head. No way. I don't care. He looked down at his plate, and a hint of fear crept into his determined voice. Please don't make me do this. Scott and I exchanged a look and said we'd think about it and continued the discussion later. But we were shocked. It was absolutely unheard of for our son to turn down any activity with Henry, his best friend, especially one related to athletics. Situations like this come up all the time for parents, where they are left completely baffled by the way their child responds to something they say. When fear, anger, frustration, and other big emotions overpower children, and they act in ways that don't make sense, there may be an easily fixable reason. They may simply be hungry or tired, or maybe they've been in the car too long, or maybe it's just because they're 2, or 3, or 4, or 5, or 15. But other times, a child acts out or behaves uncharacteristically because of more deep-seated reasons. For example, as Scott and I spoke later that night, we agreed that our son's surprising right-brained response likely resulted from a mildly traumatic experience he had undergone 3 years earlier, an experience he probably wasn't even thinking about. I knew this was a great time to introduce my son to a couple of important facts about the brain. So at bedtime that night, that's what I did. Before I tell you about that conversation, I should first explain what I was trying to accomplish when I talked to my son. I knew that one of the best ways to help a child deal with difficult experiences is to understand some basics about the science of how memory works in the brain. Memory and the brain. A couple of myths. Let's start with two myths about memory. Myth number one. Memory is a mental file cabinet. When you think back about your first date or the birth of your child, you just open the appropriate file drawer in your brain and call up that memory. It would be nice and convenient if this were true, but that's just not the way the brain works. There aren't thousands of little memory files in your head waiting for you to access them and bring them to consciousness so you can think about them. Instead, memory is all about associations. As an association machine, the brain processes something in the present moment. An idea, a feeling, a smell, an image, and links that experience with similar experiences from the past. These past experiences strongly influence how we understand what we see or feel. That influence occurs because of associations in the brain, where different neurons, or brain cells, become linked to each other. So in essence, memory is the way an event from the past influences us in the present. Imagine, for example, that you found an old pacifier between your couch cushions. What kind of emotions and memories would you experience? If you still have a baby in the house, maybe nothing too earth-shattering. But if it's been a few years since your little one used a pacifier, then you might be flooded with sentimental associations. You might remember how giant it looked in your newborn's mouth, or how quickly you moved the first time your toddler shared the binky with the dog. Or you might relive that wretched night when you all said goodbye to pacifiers for good. In the moment that you find the pacifier, all kinds of associations rush back into your awareness, impacting your present feelings and mood based on strong associations from the past. This is what memory essentially is, association. Without getting too complicated, here's what goes on in the brain. Anytime we undergo an experience, neurons fire or become activated with electrical signals. When these brain cells fire, they become linked with or join other neurons. These linkages create associations. As we explained in the introduction, this means that every experience literally changes the physical makeup of the brain, since neurons are constantly being connected and separated based on our experiences. Neuroscientists explain this process with the phrase, neurons that fire together, wire together. In other words, every new experience causes certain neurons to fire, and when they do, they wire together or link up with other neurons that are firing at the same time. Doesn't this fit with your experience? The very mention of biting into a lemon can make you salivate. Or a song in the car transports you back to an awkward slow dance in high school. Or remember when you gave your 4-year-old a piece of bubblegum after ballet class that one time? And what did she want and expect after every ballet class from then on? Of course, bubblegum. Why? Because her end of ballet class neurons had fired and wired with her bubblegum neurons. Neurons that fire together, wire together. That's how memory works. One experience, the end of ballet class, causes certain neurons to fire. And those neurons can get wired to neurons from another experience, getting bubblegum. Then each time we undergo the first experience, our brain connects it with the second one. Thus, when ballet ends, our brain triggers an expectation of getting gum. The trigger might be an internal event, a thought or a feeling, or an external event that the brain associates with something from your past. Regardless, this triggered memory then sets up expectations for the future. The brain continually prepares itself for the future based on what happened before. Memories shape our current perceptions by causing us to anticipate what will happen next. Our past absolutely shapes our present and future. And it does so via associations within the brain. Myth number 2. Memory is like a photocopy machine. When you call up memories, you see accurate, exact reproductions of what took place in the past. You remember yourself on your first date with ridiculous hair and clothes, and you laugh at your own nervousness. Or you see the doctor holding up your newborn, and you relive the intense emotions of that moment. Again, that's not quite how it happens. Well, the ridiculous hair and clothes may have really happened, but memory is not an exact reproduction of events from your past. Whenever you retrieve a memory, you alter it. What you recall may be close to exactly what happened, but the very act of recalling an experience changes it, sometimes in significant ways. To put it scientifically, memory retrieval activates a neural cluster similar to, but not identical with, the one created at the time of encoding. Thus, memories are distorted, sometimes slightly, sometimes greatly, even though you believe you are being accurate. You've had those conversations with your sibling or your spouse where after you tell a story about something, they say, "That's not how it happened." Your state of mind when you encoded the memory and the state of mind you're in when you recall it influence and change the memory itself. So the story you actually tell is less history and more historical fiction. Keep these two myths in mind as we talk in the following pages about your kids and the way their past experiences impact them. Remember that memory is all about linkages in the brain, as opposed to being alphabetical files to be accessed whenever needed, and that retrieved memories are by definition vulnerable to distortion, as opposed to being detail for detail accurate photocopies from your past. The truth about memory. Let's get explicit and implicit. Think about your memory for changing a diaper. When you approach a changing table, you don't actively talk yourself through the process. Okay, first place the baby on the pad. Now unzip the pajamas and remove the soggy diaper. Place the clean diaper under the baby and No, none of that's necessary, because when you change a diaper, you just do it. You've done it so many times before, you don't even think about what you are doing. Your brain fires off clusters of neurons that let you undo the tabs, remove the diaper, reach for a baby wipe, and so on, all without ever even realizing that you are remembering how to do it. That's one kind of memory. Past experiences, changing diaper after diaper, influence your behavior in the present, changing this particular diaper, without any realization that your memory has even been triggered.